this episode of Fictional Hangover, we talk about a marble bird, a knitting elephant, and a talking horse in our discussion of The Star-Touched Queen by Roshani Chokshi, audiobook narrated by Priya Iyer. Everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult books, series, authors, and voice actors that is full of spoilers. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire, and today we're going to discuss The Star-Touched Queen by Roshani Chokshi, audiobook narrated by Priya Iyer.
Standard disclaimer, if you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read or listened and don't want to be spoiled, stop listening to us and go read or listen to the book, then come back. If you haven't done this but want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just like the show so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen up.
Yay!
Hey!
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 Ho! Hey! Just me. That's not awkward at all.
No, it's not. It's not awkward at all.
Anywho.
We are two normal human beings.
Very, very normal.
So.
Should have screenshot that one.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I don't even have words today.
No, no, no. It's weird. Like, usually we're like, and today we're not like, there's a lot of actions.
Yeah, there's a lot of actions that no one knows about
except apart for Constance.
Because she's a member of our Patreon bonus tier. And yes. She gets to see what we're doing.
Unedited, which can be a good thing. Is a good thing.
Is it though?
Is it though? It?
No.
There's moments. There's moments of comedic genius that will never make it into the show because it's pure visual comedy.
Yes, yes indeed. So everyone go and join our Patreon bonus tier so you get to enjoy our videos too.
Shall we just jump into it today?
Yeah, I think we should. I think we should.
Have you got any background information?
Yes, as I was researching background info, I was reading several articles, and I came across a quote from one that I selected specifically for you.
Ooh.
And it's just one line that doesn't really have anything to do with anything, but I thought, you know what? Claire needs this.
Okay.
So, the article that I read is called Roshani Chokshi, The Comfort and Curse of Destiny.
Ooh.
I know, it's beautiful. It's a book page interview by Leah Bruce from April 26, 2016. And she asks, was it daunting to create such a culturally diverse and complex world? How did you go about piecing it together? And her response is, writing anything is daunting, but constructing the Star-Touched Queen's world was actually very fun. Indian mythology hints at multiple worlds, almost as if they're stacked one atop the other. Like tiers of cake! Cake. There's your line. To piece them together, I drew inspiration from some Western fairy tales about how someone would access the other world and tried to construct magical rules that would fit with the mythology. My Filipino and Indian heritage showed me how we're all telling the same tale. Many Filipino and Indian myths overlap, as do myths and folklore across wide cultural spectrums. My heritage changed how I wrote because I saw for the first time that it was natural to explore a familiar tale in a new cultural context. Essentially, I wasn't doing anything new. It made me feel like I had permission to play around with the fairy tales I liked and the heritage I knew.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, but I picked that for the cake.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. But it also goes to show that fairy tales, which I found doing my own research for uni, are very much the same everywhere.
Yeah.
There's some foundation. It's like the myth of the vampire. Most cultures have a myth of a vampire. So you're kind of like, ooh, most myths are grounded in fact. So yeah, it was interesting. But also, slightly different.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like that.
Yeah. What were your initial thoughts?
I really like the concept. I know we looked at quite a few different books for this month's theme, because it's Remember the 5th of November, and the whole idea is, you know, overthrowing a monarchy or assassinating a monarchy or overthrowing a government or, you know, some kind of change of leadership.
Yes.
And it was picked without realising electoral time schedules and everything like that, and everything just so happenstance falls in, because what we do on Fictional Hangover is destiny.
Yeah, I was gonna say we control fate.
We are. We're two of the fates. We need. Who's our third fate?
Constance.
I think so. Oh, there you go. Yeah, and this one was the one that stood out the most to me. There was a lot of good ones. There were from the list we looked at.
Yeah.
And this is the one that stood out the most to me. And I think when it was put on one of our social medias that was said we were going to talk about the Star-Touched Queen, there was a good reaction to it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that made me even more excited to read it.
Yeah, we had several listeners on our Facebook book club page, which everyone should go and join, by the way. Who are really excited that we were talking about this one. I had one person messaging me saying, I love this book. I'm so happy that you're doing this book. Oh my God. Oh my God. So.
Well, can hooray! I say then, if there's books like this that you absolutely love and adore, let us know.
Yeah.
And we will, you know, we will consider them. I mean, we will say that we prefer books that are obtainable from the library.
Yes.
Because then it means it's accessible to everybody and not just to us.
Yes.
So if there is a book that you love, let us know. You know, give us a message on one of our socials, drop us an email, go to the website and send us a message that way. You know, put in one of the comments and say, I would like to recommend X, Y, and Z. We will consider every single one that we're given. And if we don't really cover it on the show, there's a very good chance that we'll read it in our personal TBRs. So.
Yes, we will. Like... I sometimes wish that there weren't so many great books to read.
Yeah, it's a pain in the bum, isn't it?
It really is. Like, after reading this one, you know, this is... people have recommended it in the past to me, like, outside of the podcast world. And, you know, I don't have time to read everything. But after reading this one now for the podcast, like, it just makes me realize that there are stories from all over the world, and I'll never have time to read them all, and I want to.
Yeah.
I want to read all of them.
Yeah. I wish I could just download them into my brain Matrix style.
Yes.
And then go, ooh, these were my favourites, and I will then sit and read them.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. If only. If only we could do that. Okay, well, let's get into it, because it's so beautiful, we need to talk about it. In Barta, no one believes in ghosts, because the dead never linger. Instead, they believe in reincarnation. Maya is attending the funeral pyre of one of her father's wives, Padmavati, but no one's really interested in it, like, not even her father, the Raja, who's discussing war with a courtier instead of paying attention to this funeral. Mother Dina, the iron fist ruler of the harem, hisses at Maya to stay in her place. She and Mother Shastri like to gossip, and usually it doesn't mean much, but this time they're talking about Maya. Mother Dina says that Maya's horoscope brought bad luck to Padmavati, that her kind of bad fortune only attracts ill luck, so she might as well have killed Padmavati herself. Mother Shastri says the Raja should get rid of Maya and mentions rumors about her, like snakes bowing to her and her shadow never staying in one place. Maya leaves them to their gossip. Somehow, I would be erupting in flames if I were Maya, I'm not gonna
She's
lie.
She's probably used to it by now, unfortunately.
Yeah, probably. And that makes me sad. But anyway, she leaves and walks through the gardens. The sun feels wrong on her skin, and when she looks down, she can't see her shadow. Ooh. Oh my god, the rumors are true! Ooh. The rumors are true!
So she's going to the archives to see her tutor of the week. But they never teach her what she wants to know. Maya loves the archives, loves getting lost in the fairy tales there and imagining herself in them. Maya doesn't hoard these tales, but always shares them with her younger half-sister, Gowri. But now is not the time for fairy tales. Her tutor, who does not seem as nervous around her as all the others, wants to teach her stillness.
Oh my god. Who wants to learn stillness?
If stillness Stop is just it. Going to sleep, I'm all for it.
Okay, I agree. There we go.
She tries to frighten him with her smile, which usually works, but this tutor is different. Shadows surround him, cutting off the light, and he smells wrong, like he's wearing someone else's scent.
No, thank you.
No, that's no. I mean, there's one thing wearing somebody else's aftershave or perfume, but no.
I don't think that's what's happening here.
No, neither do I. It's a lot creepier. So as his voice lulls Maya, she sees his shadow against the wall, shifting into a man and a horned beast and back again.
No!
He's Raksha. When Maya is able to break free, she tells him, "I don't care for the ways of men and demons. Your lessons are lost on me." Can I just point out I had a total Labyrinth moment at this point?
Yes.
Like... she put David Bowie in his place. Anywho. Yes. The tutor seems like a different person after that, fearful of her now, and runs off.
Well, I would be too. You have no power over me! Now that the tutor is gone, Maya is free to climb up in the rafters and eavesdrop on her father in his throne room. This is another reason she likes the archives. She overhears her father making a pronouncement to his courtiers. He wants to bring about the end of the war. The courtiers say they can withstand longer with only a few hundred more deaths. Shrug. But the Raja is insistent. The wedding will be the end of the war. Wedding? Whose? This is quickly clarified when one courtier argues that the moment the rebel kingdoms hear about Princess Mayavati's horoscope, they will not go through with the wedding. Oh no. Oh no. Oh no, it's her wedding. And it's in just a few days' time. Oh no.
Surprise!
Oh, no. Hey! You don't know about this, but you're getting married!
Walking back to the harem, Maya receives a summons from her father, who is in the gardens talking to the crown prince, her half-brother Skander. The Raja and his son are very different. The Raja prizes wisdom, Skander, wealth. The Raja tells him that there is no difference between them and peasants, that subjects will not remember the person, but the impression they leave. The Raja dismisses Skander and speaks to Maya. He knows she's been eavesdropping on his court from the rafters for years and celebrates her intelligence. He hopes that in the next life she will be born a boy. Gross.
No.
Gross.
Stop it.
But for now, there is duty that must be done. She must be married. In a daze, Maya finds herself back in the harem, facing the derision of the wives and her half-sisters. When she announces she is to be married, it is the shrieks throughout the harem and questions of is it to be to a monster who matches your horoscope.
Oh my god, they're terrible.
Shake my head at all of them.
They're terrible.
Gowri is the only one who is upset at the news. Deciding to take charge of her own future, Maya plans to escape.
Maya starts to pack when there is a knock at her door. It's Gowri, asking for her nightly story. She wants to hear about the other realms, in particular, the Night Bazaar. So Maya tells her a magical tale. Gowri is determined to visit one day, and Maya tells her she can only reach it on the night of the full moon. Gowri is worried they will never meet again in this life or the next. But she is hopeful that, as they are sisters now, they will be again. Maya tells her that they share the same sky and can always find each other in the constellation, the Solitary Star. One last hug, and Maya sends Gowri to bed. Suddenly, everything goes dark, and a familiar-sounding, high-pitched female voice rumbles through the room, pleading to be led somewhere. A mysterious woman grabs Maya's wrist and ice-cold pain shoots through her, but abruptly stops. She goes to the door, but finds it locked by Mother Dina, apparently at the Raja's behest. Mother Dina hates Maya, calls her a pestilence, and blames her for the death of some of her babies. Maya's pleas about someone being in the room with her fall on deaf ears. Oh, you're just making it up. There's no one in there with you. You're fine. You're not going to get murdered. You're fine. Shut up.
Well, serve her right when she turns up murdered the next day.
The end.
The end. The next night, instead, a scratching at her locked door grabs Maya's attention. Her father has come with a gift that will free her from the marriage. Ooh, it's a bottle of poison!
Oh, hooray, no.
Oh, shoot.
No. No. Poison? No.
I mean, a nice scarf or some jewellery, you know. Yeah, that would be lovely.
Yeah. Nope, poison.
But not poison. He wants her to sacrifice herself so that the rules of hospitality may become null and void and his guards may dispatch the rebel's retinue. He tries to talk to her about sacrifice and duty, that it's better to die by her own hand than by her enemy. When those tactics don't work, he talks about Gowri, about her fate and future. He leaves, instructing her to take the poison during the ceremony the next day. In the morning, there is a flurry of activity to prepare her for the wedding. As she walks through the harem without the customary blessings of the wives, Onigiri cares. Maya asks her to look after her mother's sapphire necklace for her. Her mind is made up. She's going to drink the poison.
Yikes.
Whoa.
Yikes.
The end. A really short book if that was the case.
Oh, man. Oh. The guards lead Maya into her father's welcoming hall, full of rebel suitors, all lined up and ready for her to choose her husband. What an excellent selection! Here's a bunch of people that want to kill us. Pick the one that you want to marry? Or drink the poison. When they leave her alone to decide, Maya takes out the vial. But before she can drink the poison, a stranger knocks it from her hand. He directs her to look at the rebels' chariots before becoming a martyr. There are hundreds of soldiers hiding underneath with spears. Excellent. The stranger introduces himself as Amar, Raja of Akron. Where? Is that a place? Amar tells her the rebels have already begun to attack and takes her hand, helping her escape. Before they leave, something overcomes Maya and she throws the white wedding garland over Amar, which marries them. He grins in reply. As the fighting spills into the room, they escape on Amar's water buffalo. Maya has never been this free. I want to escape somewhere on a water buffalo.
Yeah. To get to Akron, they must travel through the Night Bazaar, a place of magic and the setting of many of Maya's tales to Gowri. But it can't be a real place.
No, it's I thought it was a story.
Exactly. As the dark tunnel they are travelling through opens, they see impossible creatures, ethereal animals, light and dark, a rainbow of colour. Maya dismounts the water buffalo, she catches sight of Mar, and in the shadows, his face glints sinister. Ooh. Grabbing a stick, Maya tells him to keep away. This unbelievable situation has hit Maya full force. She demands Amar tell her what he wants from her. His response, your perspective and honesty. I want to be humbled by you. Ambition pulls at Maya and she accepts Amar's hand when he slashes it and makes his pledge to her in blood. They continue through the Night Bazaar. It is glorious, full of colour and sound, smells, wonder and temptation. Everywhere they walk, the patrons and peddlers bow their heads in deference to Amar. Maya asks why. Is he a guardian? Amar prefers that term, though he finds most see his occupation as to take, not to protect.
It's interesting.
I mean, I don't think he's working a 9-to-5 office job, I'll tell you that much.
No, I don't think so. When they reach Akron, Maya is surprised to see that Akron was a world completely alone. There was so much space! In the palace, Maya meets Gupta, Amar's dearest friend and counselor, who calls her Rani, Queen. Gupta is... How do we put this? He's a little odd.
He's a character. He is a character.
He is. But he's nice enough.
Yes.
He leaves them with the promise of discussing her duties the following day. Over dinner, Amar says he will test her in the usual aspects of ruling. Her fangs and claws and bloodlust, eyes and ears and thoughts. Yes, that's exactly what you test people when you're testing their ability to rule. Their fangs and their claws and their bloodlust.
I've never been a monarch, so that could be accurate. I've hope true. It's multiple choice.
Yes, yes. That night, Maya says she still does not trust her husband, and they share a bed, but with all the excessive cushions piled between them.
Cushion fort!
Yay! Ooh, I want to build a cushion fort.
I love a cushion fort. And then the cushions go on the floor, and then the floor is lava. The following morning, Maya wakes alone. Gupta is waiting for her outside, ready to lead her to breakfast and to discuss her duties. There is no formality between them as Maya asks Gupta to eat with her. Gupta tells her strange things like interviewing a snail that had slept for 3 years. It's absolutely critical information.
It is so important.
It's so important. Maya tells him she hopes that they can be friends, to which he responds, once a friend, always a friend. Which, for me, feels a little out of place. Just
it does. It does.
A skittering from an unknown source interrupts them, and Maya correctly works out that Akron is a place between the human and the other world. And that sometimes things cross over, or only partially do, which is creepier. In the meantime, Amar is waiting in the throne room.
The throne room is magnificent, but it is a tapestry covering the wall beside the dais that is truly breathtaking. Silken vines of color weave in and out, but a terrible rent goes through the middle and strikes Maya like a rip inside her own being. She can feel the pull of the tapestry like it's a hunger and notices imperfections in the stitching. Maya's hand itches to manipulate the threads, but as she reaches out, Amar stops her. He explains that each thread is a person and the tapestry is how the border between the other world and the human realms is kept safe. Amar offers to explain.
Thick silver threads are connected to a boy, Vikram, with two futures. Both are great and terrible in their own way. Both depend on when his mother enters the other world. In the silver thread, he is taken in by the king and raised as the king's son. He will be a warrior and a hero, tirelessly advocating for his people, and will eventually attain peace on his deathbed after countless lives are lost. In another thread, the boy becomes a mercenary. He is never raised by the king. He must fight to survive. The peace he fights for is much more easily accomplished in this outcome. In both, he feels the loss of his mother. Maya must decide which thread he will live. She has time to decide, though.
I don't know how I feel about this.
I like it!
Yeah, I like it too. But imagine if you're Maya and you have to decide...
Yoink!
Amar explains that ruling Akron is like balancing an illusion. You need to separate the illusion of what you see and the reality of its consequences. Amar taps a marble bird, and it seems to come to life, but is connected to the slab by a small chain. A sword appears in Maya's hands, and Amar tells her to use her weapon. Maya brings the sword down on the bird. Amar tells her she failed his test. She did not fully consider her choices. She could have cut the chain and freed the bird, or killed its oppressor. Nope, bird murderer.
I mean, to be fair, it depends what kind of bird. If it was a penguin, I would be upset and probably wouldn't do it. But if it was a peacock, I would take its head off. I am definitely...
Really?
Do you not like them? Do you not like peacocks?
We really need to delve into why you hate giant birds so much. This is not the first time it has come up, and we really need to understand it.
I don't
But that's another time.
It is, but it comes up very regularly in the house, and nobody can explain it. Anywho. On the way to dinner that evening, Maya spots a charred door and hears a small, whispery voice behind it. Gupta cannot see the door or hear the voice. After dinner, the voice coming from the charred door is singing, and it resonates through Maya. Is the palace testing her like Gupta and Amar said it would? Maya investigates and discovers strange mirrors and paintings lining the hallways, and a beautiful glass garden. This is where Amar finds her. Amar is angry as she's wandering without an escort, but seemingly for her own safety. There is still the issue of trust between them. Amar says he trusts Maya, but Maya is adamant that trust is earned by actions and time, and she finds it difficult to trust her husband when she has never seen his face in full, as it is always half covered by a hood. Amar allows her to remove it to see that he has a face she recognises. From a dream, perhaps? Amar asks for some strands of her hair and fashions them into a bracelet, which he places on his wrist next to a simple strap of black leather tied into an elegant knot.
I'm starting to get an idea about what's happening in this place.
Yes.
Maya realizes that nothing in the palace is alive. The bird was marble, the garden glass. Muddled voices fill the palace, sometimes incoherent, other times strong and loud. After breakfast the following morning, Amar waits for Maya in a marble vestibule with mirror portals flashing through different settings. He takes her to a room of stars where he fulfills a promise to give her the moon as her throne and stars to wear in her hair. They stand amongst the stars, and though the sight is beautiful, Maya considers the stars her jailers because of her terrible, horrible horoscope that everyone hates her for. Amar tells her that they are just stars. It's the interpreters that bind her. He instructs her on how to bind the stars with string and how to reinterpret them. When they return from the stars, there is a smell of wet fur and the sound of claws and howling. Gupta meets them and confirms that hunting hounds are in the palace, but will not say who or what they are hunting. What a great end to that beautiful little experience in a room full of stars. Oh yeah, there's giant hounds in here and they're attacking, or they're hunting someone.
It's less the knowledge of the giant hounds and more the smell of wet fur. But
yeah, I don't like that either.
It just kills the romance.
It does.
Maya doesn't see Amar for 3 days, though his half of the bed shows signs of him being there. She explores Akron and the doors to the other worlds. On the 4th day, in a pale white courtyard with a single huge pillar in the middle that cracks when she touches it, Amar suddenly appears and looks awful. He points to the pillar and tells her it is a reminder that none can escape death. She knows the tale and who is inside, Narashima, and Amar begs her to tell him the story. When she is done, they finally have a very passionate kiss. Very passionate kiss.
Mm.
For the next week, Maya chooses bliss over burden, not thinking about Vikram's thread she must pull, or why Amar leaves before dinner and returns while she sleeps, always looking tired. One evening, Amar tells her the moon is waning and she must make her decision the following day. As she walks back to her room, she hears that soft voice singing again.
Standing before the tapestry, the longer she waits to make her decision, the more the threads unravel. Maya reasons that the red thread carries too much risk. Peace was accomplished more easily, but will it hold after Vikram dies? But a peace won with words and will hold better. Maya tries to pull the red thread and feels it pulse and burn her. Amar leaves her to contemplate further. She tries to pull again, but nothing happens. Then the tapestry quivers and ichor seeps through the threads.
Ew.
Light and color and voices stream through, surrounding her. And in a blink, the tapestry is gone.
Uh-oh.
Suddenly, thunder claps, but the clouds disappear as soon as Maya thinks how unusual that is. She tests this and finds that she is controlling the weather. But it's not just the weather. The doors in Akron open and close, even the ones that refused to open to her before. And there are voices everywhere.
Ooh.
What is going on?
Ooh. Amar and Gupta are with Maya when she awakens. She can hear Gupta saying she's not ready and Amar protesting that she is. When she opens her eyes, Gupta leaves and Amar explains that she is finding her power. This awakening is what makes her a true queen of Akron. Amar explains that their rule is equals, that this power is her own, and the reason she couldn't move the thread is because she didn't believe in herself. Maya asks to be left alone. She can hear the door slamming in the halls and remembers that one door she must investigate. Later, Amar knocks on their bedroom door. It seems their conversation isn't over. Amar wants her to understand. Maya feels there is no trust. Gupta's screams cut through the air and they find him shaking and his clothes look burned. Amar tells her to go back to the room. Feeling scolded like a child, she storms off, wanting to find a door, but not the door to the bedchamber. And she finds it.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Pushing it open, Maya sees a gigantic tree standing in the middle of an empty room, with gnarled trunks and twisted roots of impossible size. Thousands of small candles enclosed in glass cylinders are nestled amongst the leaves. Touching the trunk, Maya can feel a heartbeat. Examining the candles closer reveals they are shards of mirror. When Maya touches them, she sees memories, and though they are foreign, she feels a familiarity. They are her memories. Suddenly, she hears Amar calling for her. Rushing from the room with the tree, Maya makes it back to their bedchamber before he appears. He needs to leave. As he turns, Maya swears she could see the snaky outline of a noose falling from the black leather bracelet he wears.
Ooh.
Ooh.
A woman's shadow seems to follow Amar. Maya has not seen another person in the palace, so she follows and sees the dead.
Oh.
Gupta stands in front of them, directing them. Suddenly Maya knows why she has never heard of Akran. There is no such place. She has, in fact, always been in Narka, the realm of the dead, which makes Amar the Dharma Raja, the Lord of Justice in the afterlife. Stumbling through the dead, Maya finds her way to the throne room, and Amar bent over the tapestry, ripping threads out, a crown of black buck horns upon his head. Running away, Maya ends up back in their bedchamber, realizing her horoscope came true. She is married to death. Dum dum dum.
Yikes!
But death's hot, so
it's true. The next morning, Maya wanders. She finds a room with smoke and ash. When she goes in, she finds cliffs leading down to the reincarnation pool. Everywhere, souls are toiling or suspended in chains. Before passing to the next life, the soul must atone for the sins of the past life. Walking past cells, Maya hears someone call to her. It's her father, chainmail peeling off his body, a dark gash near his ribcage. Her father tells her that Bartha won the war almost 10 years ago.
What?
10 years? No, it's only been a few days, surely.
Like, not even a week.
Yeah, not 10 years, for sure. Leaving her father, Maya returns to the tree.
Maya takes one of the mirror shard memories and sees Amar bent over the reincarnation pool. She looks at another and another, but doesn't understand what she is seeing. Some thought shows Amar in the shadows protecting her as she is subjected to the abuse of the harem sisters. Pulling herself out of the visions, Maya looks into the obsidian mirror behind the tree. In it, she sees Nriti, a girl who was in some of the mirror visions, whose memories Maya shares. Nriti tells her that she has been searching for her since being taken and hidden in the palace. Nriti tells Maya now that she knows what Amar is capable of, they need to get her out. Maya nods numbly. Nriti tells her they grew up as sisters and that death traps girls here and feeds off of them. There are hundreds of trees and hundreds of girls, each one with a grim horoscope. Last time, Maya got away. Nriti doesn't know how, but she says Amar will kill Maya because he can't stand being crossed.
Yikes.
Nriti has to be right, which is why Gupta and Amar warned her away from all the hidden doors in Akran. They didn't want her to find out. Nriti tells Maya that if she brings her death's noose and destroys this tree, they can be free. Footsteps outside end their conversation, but Nriti's words echo through her head. He will kill you if you give him the chance.
Yes.
Then she hears Gupta say, tomorrow is the new moon. You need not worry any longer. Everything you've done, saving her life, bringing her here, it will all be worth it. Now that she's here, we can get rid of her the way you always wanted. I am confident of it. What?
Yikes.
Gupta, I thought we were friends. Don't do me wrong, Gupta. Don't do me wrong.
Yikes. Hiding in the shadows, Maya listens to Amar and Gupta. Their conversation does not instill confidence. I have waited long enough, and I will not be denied, says Amar. When their voices fade away, she steps out. A new door has appeared in the hallway. Inside is filled with all the objects from her father's palace, including her mother's blue sapphire necklace she gave to Gowri. She falls into memories of Gowri and knows she will steal Amar's noose that night.
Oh. Maya is nervous. Amar comes into their bedroom and Maya tries to seduce him to the bed. Amar declares his love as they lie in each other's arms. When he sleeps, she steals the noose. With it and Gowri's necklace, she leaves to find Nriti. Nriti demands the noose. It will render Amar powerless. Maya hands the noose over, and as soon as she does, something sizzles and snaps through the air. The great tree, full of memories, twists and begins to decay. Everything is on fire. Yikes. This is not good.
No.
Amar stands in the doorway, his face a mask of horror, his eyes glued on the noose in Ritty's hands. He looks up to Maya. Why has she done this? His lies. He hid the death of Barta from her. Nriti laughs at Amar, stepping from the broken mirror. Without him, there is no more death. She hands Maya a knife and tells her to plunge it into the tree so she can reclaim herself. Nriti and Amar fight over Maya, but eventually Maya plunges the knife into the tree. Amar begs Maya not to forget him. He loves her and his soul will not forget her. Maya looks death in the eyes and is engulfed in memory.
Yikes.
Whoa.
Yikes. This is terrible.
It really is. It's not happy fun times.
In another life, Maya remembers meeting the Dharmaraja and pledging themselves to each other. They were so very happy together. Then she remembers the reincarnation, the light and the pain. She saw Amar slumped in his throne, Gupta standing sallow at his side. Amar's order to check every birth record, every horoscope, until they find her again. He has preserved all her memories for her when she returns. Once she is found, he needs her to stay only 60 turns of the moon, only a handful of weeks in Naraka, and then Amar can reveal Maya's past and restore her powers. She can be queen once more. But nope, you stabbed the tree. You ruined everything.
She gone and messed up.
Ruin her!
I'm not sad, I'm just disappointed.
Yeah.
So, jolting back to the present. Maya has regained all her memories of her former self. Naraka, however, is gone. There is no Amar, there is no Nriti. 1,000 questions fly through her mind. The loudest, what have I done?
Excellent question. What have you done? You ruiner.
Slowly, the landscape becomes familiar. She is standing in cremation grounds. Ugh. On her own grave.
No, it's worse. Ugh. Oh, it's worse.
Ugh. The broken bracelet of her hair lying on the ground, her mother's necklace and an onyx stone lying next to it. Having been ripped from Naraka, her soul was left gasping. Gasping?
You wrote it, I don't know. I just edited it.
I'm going to say gasping. Grasping doesn't make sense. Her soul was left gasping. Having been ripped from Naraka, her soul was left gasping. She had felt whole for a short time, and now she knows what she and Amar had was real, but she destroyed him.
Because she's a ruiner. Ruiner. I'm just so disappointed. I'm not going to let her live it down.
No, this is not something you forget. Mm-mm. It's something that comes up more infrequently, but always comes up. It's like, oh, no, you can't catch me out on doing this. I just return my books late to the library. You flip and kill death.
Yeah. Ruiner.
Catching a glimpse of herself in a puddle, Maya sees that being exiled by both Barta and Narka has turned her into a member of the living dead. She now wears the tumeric yellow robes of the Sadvis. Contemplating her next actions, Maya spots something tall and bestial rising from the shadows. It is a painfully thin horse. And it talks. It's a sassy horse.
It is indeed.
It wants to take a bite of Maya to discern what Maya is. She doesn't smell human or otherworldly. The horse calls her a false Sadvi. Maya tells the horse she is Rani of Narka. And the horse laughs.
Because of course the horse laughs.
Of course. The horse is having a difficult time believing Maya. Whilst we, on the other hand, are perfectly accepting of a talking horse. Maya says that to prove who she is, she will find the horse a soul in the other world. She promises the horse can take a bite or two if she is not telling the truth. As assurance, the horse asks for some of her hair and gives Maya her name, Kamala, in return. Maya climbs on Kamala's back. To get back to the other world, they must head to the ocean.
At the ocean, they meet Aravata, a tricky elephant who likes to knit clouds. I like how everything is like completely magical at this point.
Yeah. We have probably went to the other world of magic.
Yes. You kill Death, you get a talking horse and a knitting elephant. Aravata refuses to let Maya and Kamala into the other world because one may only enter through invitation, self-worth, or sacrifice, not demands. Kamala tells Maya she can sniff out the Dharmaraja if Maya knows the area he will be in, because when Death is close, Kamala becomes alive.
Ooh.
Ooh. A memory tells Maya they need to head to Chakra Forest, so they ask Aravata for a cloud bridge to take them there. Hooking a cloud into his tusks, Aravata follows them, then sneaks into the water as Kamala races over the cloud bridge. Finally, they reach the place where Maya suggested they go to find the Dharmaraja. They are in the human world, where Death is always close by, so Kamala is now muscular and her coat gleams. Aravata's words ring in her ears. To enter the other world and save Amar, Maya must release the ghosts of her past. So before going to find Amar, she wants to bury her mother's necklace in Barta.
In Barta, her father's sigils have been replaced. There are people crowding the streets, and when Kamala and Maya approach, they fall silent. When Kamala gnashes her teeth and shakes her mane, many scatter. Kamala notes that she can smell their hunger. Barta has suffered greatly. The people start shouting that the first holy sadhu was here. They haven't been forsaken. And she's come with a holy horse. So, you know, you best stop snapping at them. Sound advice Maya gives her. Sound advice.
Oh my God.
The crowd begs Maya to help them, to plead with the Raja to send Garumar to bring back their sons. Garumar is the princess with the dimpled smile and the deadly aim. Maya's half-brother, Skander, the new Raja, is a bloated toad. She is tempted to let Kamala eat him. I'm all for that.
Yes.
Seconded. Yes. It is clear that the people adore Gary, who doesn't wear the clothes of the harem, but instead is dressed as a warrior. She wants to go and rescue their people, but Skander will not be swayed and tries to assert his authority. Now that they have a sadhu, it is agreed that she will be the one to decide.
And she should decide to feed him to the horse.
Yes, of course, of course.
The palace is at once familiar and strange, a shadow of its former self. Walking in the gardens, Skanda lets Maya know he knows she is a charlatan, but he will let her continue the ruse so long as she helps him. She must stop Gowri from going on a reconnaissance mission for men that can be replaced and help him keep the illusion of strength alive. Maya will hold vigil, and Gowri and a harem wife as witnesses may attend. When Skanda departs, Kamala tells Maya she can sense the Dharmaraja, but it was just for a fleeting moment. He has left something in Chakra Forest. As they turn to leave, Maya feels a blade at her throat. It's Gowrie. She will not allow the imposter to do her brother's bidding. She probably would if Maya fed him to the horse.
Yeah.
But she didn't do that. Maya points out that she only heard what was said, not the actual intention. Maya tells her the plan is for Gowrie to go and retrieve the soldiers as soon as their public meeting concludes, while the harem wife acts as a distraction. When Gowrie comes home victorious, she is to praise the Raja so he does not take retribution on the returned soldiers. Walking into the temple, Maya finds the harem wife waiting. It's Mother Dina.
Oh, she's not dead yet. I mean,
for fuck's sake, come on.
She's got to be ancient, anywho. Maya instructs Mother Dina to start a fire in the harem. She's a little too happy at this point, by the way. You know, yeah, fire!
Yes! Oh, fire!
But not to hurt anyone. Oh, damn it. Sad face. But to create a distraction with Gowrie. Mother Dina is wary of Maya. She sees a hint of Maya's mother in her, but isn't so obvious as to state it aloud. She agrees to do as she is asked. Gowrie comes riding up to Maya and Carmela, and they're off. The distraction has worked. Gowrie thanks Maya for her help, and Maya gives her the necklace. Maya tells Gowrie she knew her sister, that she is happy, and she fell in love with a man who treats her as an equal. Before Maya can leave, though, Gowrie asks where she might find her sister again. Maya responds, in our same constellation, the solitary star. Recognition passed over Gowrie's face as Maya rides off. Ooh.
Shock. They arrive in the forest at the place the Dharma Raja left something that Kamala calls his representatives, but Maya sees nothing, though Kamala can feel them. Closing her eyes and letting go of herself, Maya can feel them too, and hear them, and see them. Just outside the shadows are three massive hounds. Then she sees a vision of Nriti singing. Maya is pulled to her, but Kamala stops her because Nriti smells of blood and is luring children to her. When Nriti finishes her song, she opens her jagged teeth-filled mouth and kisses the head of one of the children, stealing the child's youth. She does this to a few, and the rest she instructs to go to the other world for her wedding. Her wedding? Excuse me. What?
At Nriti's command to summon him, Amar is brought forth. Who the hell does she think she is, summoning death?
I don't know.
His arms are clasped behind him and his noose is in his hands. He and Nriti share a kiss that holds absolutely no warmth, and Amar shows signs of pain, but Nriti tells him it's because he needs his queen, her, to rule with him, and that he should will his power to her.
No, stop it.
In a blink, Amar, Nriti, and the children and the hounds disappear back to the other world. Maya and Carmela need to get there. Carmela points out that Maya could sacrifice the onyx stone she had with her when she woke as a Sadvi. Inside is a memory. To open a pathway, she must consign the stone to the earth with blood. When Maya does, the earth opens and they step through.
The night bazaar is no longer there. Only snarled trees and debris left behind. Kamala tells Maya that everyone fled, but that she can sense Amar. They find him perched on a throne of thorns, a blank look in his eyes. Beside him, Nriti sits on a throne of bones. There is hunger in the air. Nriti speaks to the beings surrounding the thrones, growing their hunger. She will allow them to satiate it wherever they please once her marriage ceremony has concluded. Nriti whets their appetite with one of the boys from the forest. As she raises a knife, Maya mounts Kamala and they run to the thrones, shouting for her to stop. Amar looks up, but sees only a stranger.
Oh no! Realizing where she is, Maya dismounts and bows to Amar and Nriti. Kamala mutters to Maya that Nriti is hungry for her. Nriti doesn't seem to recognise her thought and threatens to use her as a sacrifice to the hungry beasts instead. Amar gives the Sadhi Maya his protection because he wants to hear her speak. Maya tells him that Nriti's enchantment has robbed the boy of his will and that they should play a game of riddles. If she cannot answer Nriti correctly, then Maya will take the place of the boy, but she must be permitted to have a private audience with the Dharmaraja. Nriti pulls Gupta out from behind the throne to take Kamala away. He's looking worse for wear.
It's a shame.
Yeah.
Nriti asks her riddle. Which animal is the most cunning? Is that a riddle or a matter of opinion? But Maya answers, the one we have yet to discover.
Ooh.
Clever. There's a slight quirk at Amar's mouth. Her second riddle, I am clothed but cannot grow. What am I? Maya responds, it's either me or moss over stone. Amar declares he is satisfied with the answers. Nriti still demands a soul, so Maya cleverly offers her sandal. A soul for a soul. Yes. Amar accepts this, but demands her to be locked up in Narka for insulting Nriti's honor. Come on, that was a clever joke.
Well, to be fair, Amar's the one who told her it in the first place, so... But he just doesn't remember. So Maya is locked in a room with an obsidian mirror. Amar is standing next to her and declares she is not Sadvi. Maya asks for his noose back to free them, that she knows his soul and it would not allow these atrocities. Maya gives him back her bracelet of hair and he remembers everything.
Yay!
At last. Nriti enters, offers to kill Maya as a kindness and instead plunges her knife into Amar. Yes. But he is death. He cannot die.
Thank goodness.
Whew. Turning toward Maya, Nriti tries to kill her too, but Maya will not cower. In a stolen moment, Maya is able to get to the tapestry and pulls both her and Nriti's threads. In the cascade of magic, Maya remembers all her lost names and her past with Nriti. She sees Nriti in love with a mortal Vanaj, who was called to war. Maya could not stop Vanaj's thread from unravelling, so Nriti turned from her. More trouble was sown when Maya had to wear the thread of a Deva, a god, who she cursed to be reborn as mortal. Because of the decision, confidence in Maya was lost. Amar stood by his wife's decision and declared that fire always reveals the truth, so he will put her through a trial by fire. It was then that Maya felt betrayed, but he had to try her to prove her correct and keep her safe. This left an opening for Nriti to sow seeds of doubt in Maya, telling her that Amar had turned on her. When Maya walks through the fire triumphant, she looks to Amar, who is smug. But later, she would call him a liar and blame him for her humiliation. They have a terrible fight, and Maya climbs into the reincarnation pool and leaves him.
Oh. Back at the tapestry, Maya realizes that her life is her own, and that Nriti has been manipulating her ever since she let her love's thread rabble. She pulls her own thread and untwists it from Nriti's. Nriti finds Maya screeching at her. She flings Amar's noose at her, and Maya catches it. Stepping through a portal to Amar, she gives him back the noose and kisses him. They have found each other again. No illusion, no lies, and they are no longer tied to Nriti. The beings of the other world recognize their sovereigns and turn on Nriti. Together as equals, Maya and Amar bind Nriti, restoring balance to the other world.
Yay!
Yay! The end. Oh my gosh, I did not want that story to end.
Have you read the synopsis for the second one?
No, I haven't, but I know it's about Gowri.
And...
Vikram.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's on my TBR.
Yeah, mine too. And it's only a duology. So that'll wrap it all up nicely, hopefully.
Exactly, exactly, exactly.
I love a duology.
So do I. It's so rare to get just a standalone or a duology. Like, I do enjoy a long series, don't get me wrong. You know, burying myself into characters and worlds for a long period of time is great. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I just want a snappy, quick reads and have that smaller amount of satisfaction.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yes.
Allow us to take a break for a moment. We need to process this story. So while we're doing that, you listen to this. Please remember that Fictional Hangover is a free podcast and always will be. If you'd like to support the show, stop listening to us for just a few minutes, become a patron of ours on Patreon at patreon.com/fictionalhangover, then come back. If you can't do this monthly but still want to support us because you just like the show so much, head over to Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/fictionalhangover to drop us a one-time tip. Your support on Patreon and Ko-fi will help us bring you more spoiler-filled discussions, book character cosplays, and ridiculous content you know and love. Now, back to the episode.
So, I'm going to throw this out here. I got massive Lainey Taylor feels from this book.
Yes, as did I. And I'm magic and whimsy all over the place.
Yes, and I think I managed to listen to it before you did. And I knew as soon as it got to certain parts, I was like, Amanda's going to love this. Amanda's going to love this.
And I did. Magic and whimsy.
Yeah.
It's just beautiful.
We don't have enough magic and whimsy on... We seem to have like a series of books where it was all just, everything was terrible. I mean, I'm not October. October's different. October's horrible.
October was purposefully horrible.
And it was perfect in every terrible way. It was gorgeous. Yes. It was a wonderful month. But we seem to have like a lot of months where it was just dystopian, no hope, horrible futures. And it was like it was too much. It was too much. And we needed some magic and whimsy.
We did. Don't worry though. Next month, December's gonna be, it's gonna be lovely for the most part.
Very much looking forward to December.
Me too. Mostly positive stories, except for the last one. But the last one is fun in and of itself.
It's being picked for the childhood memories.
Yes.
We all remember reading these when we were impressionable youth.
Yes, yes we do. But anyway, next month is full of magic and whimsy and R.L. Stein. You can't go wrong with R.L. Stein.
No. And just for
can't go wrong with Fear Street. Anyway, we're not talking about that now. We're talking about the Star-Touched Queen. And can I just tell you that, you know, it's full of magic and whimsy, so of course I love it. But Kamala is the best thing to ever happen to a book. Ever. She's my favorite in every way.
Sassy talking horse for the win.
Right? Who constantly wants to eat you. Or that's others.
That's complimentary. She's always saying how nice she smells and she wants to take a nibble. I think that's very complimentary.
Yeah. But seriously, everything about her. As soon as Kamala trotted into the story, I was like, I'm done. This is the best thing ever.
It changed, didn't it? The tone changed as soon as Kamala entered the scene as well.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. First... Well, I mean, she had just murdered Death, essentially. So, of course, everything's going to, like, shatter and be completely different when she comes to.
It's like, please enter, stage left, the comic relief of the piece.
Yes.
The very hungry will take a nibble out of you, comic relief.
The demonic horse.
Love, love, love. She was amazing. Yeah. I absolutely adored the way that Maya was the only one who could hear her when she's talking to her half-brother, when she's talking to Skander. And she's like, I'm just going to take a bite out of him. Just tell me I'll do it. Shut up, man. Honestly, he's a bloated toad. He could stand to lose a few pounds. Will you pack it in?
I love it. I love when they're walking through to get to the gate. And, you know, Maya is a sadhvi now, and everyone's looking at her, and she's like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to pretend to be a sadhvi. And Kamala's like, just talk to me. That'll help. They can't hear me, and they'll think you're crazy. It works perfectly. So they're just carrying on a conversation, and everyone's like, oh my god,
the list, it's a sadhvi. Spiders, knives, oh, I like this list. That's a good choice. Yes.
I don't know what to do. Just mutter a list and just random words. Everything's, oh, it's so good. Everything about it, Kamala, was brilliant. Is good.
She wasn't in it enough for my liking. Like, I understand the story was divided into two parts, but dang, I felt cheated that I had to wait till halfway through the book before she came on the scene.
Yes, but she was great. But the first half of the book was also great.
Oh yes, don't get me wrong; it was wonderful. That was where the true magic, the whimsy was.
Yes, it was whimsy in the first half, and then magic in the second half.
Yes.
Oh, so great! I also really liked the Night Bazaar and the Glass Garden.
Yes,
I loved the Glass Garden.
Yes,
and, no, there's a Glass Garden here in Seattle.
Really?
That I like to visit. Yes. Yes, there is. It's beautiful. I have pictures. I should post them on social media.
You should.
I should.
We have a glass center, but it's not as magical. Though I did get my glass hand-blown pumpkin from there.
Ah. This is it's a Dale Chihuly.
Yes. I was looking at the pictures.
Beautiful. I love
but
the glass
do
garden.
You not get a bit of a Final Destination vibe from it when you walk down? You know, it's like, oh,
everything's gonna fall from the ceiling.
Yeah,
go directly through my eyeball.
Oh, in the most horrific way possible. Yes.
Yes.
Multiple.
It's funny that you
points of impact.
Yeah, it's funny that you should mention Final Destination because we just watched all the Final Destination movies, like,
all
last
of them.
Week.
Oh my gosh. I watched the first one again in October and then realised how terrible it is, but also how magnificent it is.
Yeah. We've been watching, I don't even know how long, for the entire year, we've been watching full horror series. So, you know, we've watched all the Nightmare on Elm Streets. Of course, we watched those a million times because they're our favorites. But we watched all of them, and we watched all the Jasons, and we watched all the Michael Myers. And then we moved on to Final Destination. And then we started watching Amityville. And yeah, we're just going through every horror series. And it's delightful because they're all my favorite movies of all time. I hadn't watched all of the Final Destinations, though. I think I had only seen the first two.
Yeah, I think I've only seen the first couple. I don't think I've seen any more than that.
Anyway, we keep talking about other things. We need to talk about
it. It feels
bit.
Like we do. Did we not do something similar with the Night Circus? Because it's just so beautiful. It's such a gorgeous story and so full of the magic and whimsy that we adore. It's kind of one of these situations where it's like, we want you to experience it.
Yeah.
And then once you've experienced it, we can come together and talk about it together.
Yes. Also, it, you know, because it's based on fairy tales, like every scene will inspire you and remind you of some story that you've already heard or something that you already know. So it's just, there's so many things.
It's a massive amount of familiarity, even if it's not necessarily a fairy tale. Like, you know, the elephant, Aravati,
mm-hmm.
who knits clouds.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of got this weird, like, Disney Fantasia style kind of esqueness to it, to him. But then the knitting of the clouds just made me chuckle. It's just like these juxtapositions of images that popped into my head, and it was absolutely delightful. Like, well, how does an elephant knit? They don't have fingers. He uses his tusks.
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
I'm not really sure how that works.
But it's magic.
Magic. That's it. Magic. Of course.
Exactly.
Exactly.
I like the... How does that work? Magic.
Magic. No questions, just magic. It explains everything.
Exactly. I mean, I love, like you said, Carmela. Like, her constant munchies was the best.
Her constant wanting to eat everyone.
Just take a nibble or two, it's fine. But I really like the renting of the memory tree. Like, that was a horrific scene.
Oh, I remember I was texting you. And Tanya, who is someone who suggested that we read this book, it's one of her favorite books. And, you know, she's been trying to get me to read it for years and years. But, you know, now we're actually covering it on the show. So I was texting her and I was texting you everything as I was reading it. And that part, I was like, I remember saying to both of you, like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I'm getting a really bad feeling about Amar, but I hope that he's terrible, but in a good way, and that her friend who's whispering all these things to her is actually the bad guy. And I was like, so happy when that was real. Yeah. And then I shouted in all capital letters, he's death! So happy. So happy that he was death.
It wasn't that much of a twist knowing that he was death. The signs were there. I mean, the talk about that horoscope and being married, like, in the horoscope it is be married to death. It's very literal. And
oh, she yes,
was
definitely.
Literally married to death. So, yeah. You know, it the signs are all there. And the noose and the amount of ash that seemed to be everywhere. It wasn't that much of a surprise. And especially the tapestry. The tapestry was the biggest giveaway.
Yeah.
Like, who was going to, apart from the hands of fate, who was going to have the tapestry where you basically control the lives of people? Who could that be?
Of course.
Exactly. It's in the job description. You know, you get it with your computer and your mobile phone kit. here's the tapestry. But yeah, I loved that renting scene. It was awful. And I was shouting at Maya going, No, she's bad.
Stop it.
So disappointed in her.
Yeah.
She wasn't, for me, a perfect character as well, which made her more endearing.
Yeah.
Like, she was completely full of flaws. I don't understand why she instantly believed in Ritty but didn't believe Amar.
Well, Amar hadn't been telling her things. And then he couldn't, because he was bound by the rules of the other world. He couldn't tell her anything. So anytime she wants to know what's going on, like, he and Gupta are like, oh yeah, I definitely want to tell you. Oh wait, I can't, because I'm bound by the rules of the other world. You can't know yet. You have to wait. And then we find out, you know, you have to wait this certain amount of time. And then Amar was going to give her all her memories and restore her powers. And, you know, she was going to be the queen and everything was going to be perfect. But no, she stabbed the tree instead.
Yeah. Bad times. But the thing is, as well, that is it. He's given her all of these reasons, not excuses, reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And she literally sees Amar and Gupta choking. So she knows that there's a physical reaction. And Ritty just stands there whispering and going, oh, love, he's a bad one. He's a bad one. You wanna...
Yeah, totally. You should listen to me and not them.
Yeah. Like,
they've been nothing but nice to you and they're trying to keep you safe and they want to tell you things, but they can't. But me, I'm just going to whisper shit into your ear until you fuck everything up.
Exactly.
And it worked.
And it bugged the life out of me. And I get the fact that it had already happened before when you find out with the memories. But I was still, Maya, love, come on. I realise you've lived an extremely sheltered life in the harem. But come on. Really. Come on.
Come on.
So we know Carmela is your favourite character.
Yes. Do you have a favourite that's not Carmela? Is there such a being?
There is not such a being per se, but I would say I want to know more about Gowri.
Well, read book two.
Exactly. I didn't know finishing book one if what the second book was about. I didn't want to look at it until I finished it. Yeah. And then I read the summary for book two and it's all about Gowri. And now I need to read it.
Yes. Yes, me too.
Is it worth putting on the schedule?
I don't know. If we put it on the schedule, that means we have to wait. Because we already have months figured out. Maybe we can fit it in somewhere. Maybe we can fit it in.
But yes, I liked the fact that I want to know what happened with Gowri. I want to know where, how she went from a little girl scared of the dark to this kick-ass warrior lady with the perfect aim.
Yes. I need to know that. I need to know the perfect aim story.
Yeah. It's not as if she had the upbringing of Maya where she was neglected and abused and hated by the rest of the harem. She was an adored child.
Yeah.
So what made her take that change? And I'm all for it. I love a warrior lady. I need to find out more about that. I did like Amar as well, but he wasn't in it that much realistically. I kept imagining Dev Patel playing Amar, and that might just because I think Dev Patel is a magnificent, lovely actor who can be in anything and I'll be happy.
Yeah.
Especially when he hit those like little dorky things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, back in the
room. Were you surprised by anything?
Like I said, like Nritti's sway over Maya, like it was quick and it was fast, and I get it's probably because it's already sort of planted there from previous life, but it seemed to be like straight away.
Yeah.
What about you?
I think the only thing that really shocked me was when Maya found her father in the halls of the palace. And, you know, at this point she's realizing that these are the halls of death and you have to walk through the palace to get to the other side and all of this stuff. But when she met her father and, like, she saw her own reflection and she's 10 years older and her dad's like, yeah, we won the war 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And you're like, whoa, 10 years, because the entire time it's like the next day and the next day and then, oh, a week after that. And you think, no, there's no way she could have been here for 10 years. So I liked that. And, you know, I mean, it's not really surprising. Yeah. But it is kind of surprising at the same time.
Yeah. It was definitely surprising for her.
It was indeed. Like, oh, shit. How long have I been here?
It might not be that necessarily that the time sped up, but more how much time had sped up. Like, I wouldn't have been surprised if it was a year, not 10 years. Ten years was a shock. I thought maybe a year, but yeah, 10. Whoa.
Yeah. And you didn't even notice it.
No. And she grew into her nose, which was lovely.
She did. That was nice.
Is it time?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is. I think it's time. It's time.
It's time. It's time. Pew, 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 pew. Beep, 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 beep. Wood. You?
Rather!
Ah! Why, go on then. Okay, we asked on social media, would you rather purchase a snarl of nightmares or a tangle of daydreams? Two items available in the Night Bazaar.
Mm.
On Facebook, 75% of you said nightmares and 25% said daydreams. On Instagram, 22% said nightmares and 78% said daydreams. And on Twitter, 80% said nightmares and 20% said daydreams.
Wow.
What are people using all the nightmares for?
That's what I said too. I would buy a nightmare. Yeah. I mean, I don't have to buy it for myself.
Well, exactly.
To give it to someone. Or if I did buy it, maybe it would mean that I wouldn't have nightmares. Because I own them. I control them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
A little bit like a dream catcher.
Kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah, I said nightmares as well.
Oh. Why would you buy nightmares?
More because...
Just to go...
More because I would give them to mine enemies. Not that I've got any.
Give them to your enemies.
My biggest nemesis are stairs, so I can't really give them nightmares, but you get my meaning.
Yeah.
I don't know. Daydream seems dangerous.
Yeah, I feel like you can get lost in a daydream.
Yeah. And I can imagine with daydreams, you would keep taking them like an opiate. Yeah. They could get addictive. Yeah. So I opted for Snarl of Nightmares. It's a more horrible option, but it seems... Is it a more horrible option? It seems a safer option. And like you say, do you have to use one yourself?
No. No.
We had a couple of comments...
We did. One of the comments went on for a very long conversation, too.
We did. And another one was 5 words. Lone Digger on Instagram said, I already have them both. And I hope he has them at a bargain price.
Me too. At Danae Tesh on Instagram said, but what if the daydreams are nightmares? And the nightmares are daydreams. Are the daydreams good or bad? But it also depends on who you give it to. Are they friend, foe, or undecided? You can't give the wrong thing to the wrong person. They might turn into the opposite of what they're supposed to be to you. Sorry, the writer in me can't help it. You have no idea how many questions I have going in my head over this would you rather. There are so many possibilities and scenarios that I can't decide. Yep, that's what we go through every single time.
Yeah, I kind of like the indecision and the riotous, what do I do?
Yeah, yeah. I just like that there are some questions that we ask that get these kind of responses. You know, it's not just an easy, oh, definitely this one or definitely the other. It's like, what am I going to do with it? And you can see, especially in this case, some people sit down and really think about these would you rathers. And I love that. I mean, that's really the whole reason why we do them.
Yeah, well, we love the terrible, terrible comments. Usually, yes. And by terrible, we mean people being horrifically horrible, which is great to us. Yes. But these kind of like existential crisis comments are delightful as well.
Yeah, we love them. We love them.
Shall we go to the next one?
Yes, let's go to the next one. And this one is specifically from the book. I love when we can do that. Do you remember when we did it for To All the Boys I Loved Before?
Oh, the movie, my and it was God, about drinking was pee. So funny.
But gross. I love it. I love it. I love it.
You know, if a book has a would you rather, we're going to ask it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Would you rather be a dove or a dragon?
A dragon, of course, because one, not a bird. Two, breathe fire.
Yes.
And three, we know, not a bird.
And we know after last week's episode, please go back and listen to Fireborn if you haven't. We like burning families.
No, we like barbecue. Can we like, you know, not necessarily burn the... No, let's burn the families.
No, burning families.
Sorry.
We like setting the rules on fire. Yeah. Definitely. I'm definitely going to be a dragon too.
Yeah.
I like to be terrifying things. And a dove, unless you're Claire, isn't terrifying. A dragon is terrifying.
I mean, I'm not as scared as doves because they're not that big. It's not an ostrich.
Yeah. But still, you don't like birds. I don't want to be a bird if you don't like birds.
I like penguins. Penguins are amazing. I do like some birds, like puffins and toucans and penguins. And there are some birds I do like, but doves are too close to pigeons for me, and pigeons are everywhere.
Pigeons are everywhere.
Exactly. Be a dragon.
Always be a dragon. If you can be a dragon, be a dragon.
Exactly, exactly. Okay, next question. Again, this one is from the book.
Oh, indeed.
Yes. Would you rather die by your own hand or by the enemy? Thanks, Raja.
Thanks, Raja, for the vial of poison. I don't know. I feel like if I'm gonna die by the enemy, I can probably take some of them out on my way. So I'll probably choose to do that.
You've got to build the circumstances here. You need a scenario.
Well, I just want to say that suicide is not the answer. So if I can go out and take some rebels with me, that's what I'm gonna do.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to go by the book, it's by your own hand is to take the mandrake root and milk to then break the rules of hospitality, so then your father's soldiers can attack the rebels. That's option one. Or the option two is let the rebels descend and kill you that way.
I'm still going to try to take them out.
Exactly. I'm going to pick up that sword and just swing it around wildly and, you know, hope for the best.
Yes, definitely.
And preferably using the weapon that takes the least amount of skill.
Dragonfire.
I'm going to turn into that dragon and just barbecue them all.
Yep.
And good then plan. And then invite a certain talking horse around for some munchies.
Yes. This is a perfect plan. Everything about it is perfect. I love it.
There we go.
Okay. Next question.
Yes.
Would you rather pull Vikram's red thread or the silver thread from the tapestry?
So the red thread was when he isn't adopted by the king.
Yeah, and the silver thread. Right, and the silver thread, he is adopted by the king, and things are okay but also terrible at the same time, but peaceful in the end.
And by pulling it, it is not going to happen. We're taking it out of the equation.
Yes.
I am going to pull the red thread so that he is adopted by the king. Peace takes longer, but more sustainable.
Yes, I agree 100%, like word for word would be my response. It's what you have to do.
Excellent.
Yes.
So, last question. Would you rather be bound in a pillar or locked in a cell in Naraka?
I think I'm going to be locked in a cell just because I feel like I'd be able to move just a little bit more. If you're bound in a pillar, I mean, that's it. That's what you got. You're, you know, concrete or plaster or whatever it's made out of.
I think it's a mystical, magical pillar. I don't think... I'm not sure if your physical form is... I don't know. Is your physical form bound in the pillar?
Could be.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I'm going to say locked in the cell.
Because yeah. Imagine if you've got an itch on your nose. So you, like, can't get to your nose. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Can't do it.
No.
But you can scratch your nose if you're in a cell.
Yes, and those contemplation cells, as horrible as the sound, could be quite nice just to have a break.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you're in there thinking about, you know, thinking about what you've done and you're about to move on to your next life, well, it'll be good. Think about all the terrible shit you did and try not to do it next time.
Exactly.
But if you're stuck in a pillar, you're in a pillar.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. Let's be locked in a cell. We could each be locked in a cell and have a mirror and talk to each other.
Yes. And we could, like, have our tin cups and go, nobody knows the trouble I'm in. A la Spaceballs. Or, like, yes. If there's a guard that goes past, we can, like, be Princess Leia in Star Wars.
Yes.
And be, like, a bit short for a stormtrooper.
Yes. Anything that can get us tied to a Mel Brooks film or Star Wars.
Sorted.
I'm on board.
Plan. Yeah.
Done. Okay. That's the end of Would You Rather. And now it's time for favorite final thought quote.
Oh, there's so many.
There are so many. This time I have two for fun.
Go on, you go first.
And they're both Kamala.
Shock.
I know, shock. Well, actually, one is not Kamala saying it, but it is said about Kamala. Okay. To Kamala. Go stalk a peacock.
Yes. Yes, I heard that one in my lol pile.
Just want to say it all the time. And then she actually literally does go stalk a peacock, which is fantastic.
And that's behavior that I can't help but agree with. Get that peacock.
Get him. Okay, so that's the first one. That one made me laugh out loud while I was listening to it.
It also explains why I got sent a message that just said, go stalk a peacock.
Yes, indeed. Next. It is nice to be nice. It is also nice to eat people.
Oh, yes.
I just love everything about Kamala. Like, that, it's very good advice.
It is.
But, like, she can't just let it go. She can't just say a good thing. She also has to include eating people.
Yes.
Perfect. Then my real one. I have a real one, too.
Okay.
Never let your doubt cripple you, which is, I think, very important and true to life every day. It's a good life lesson. And that's what these favorite final thought quotes used to be, like a long, 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 long time ago. They used to be life lessons taken from the book. So that's a good one.
Yeah. No, I like that one. I do like that one.
Yeah.
The thing is with quotes, sometimes you just like them for the sheer thrill of them. Like,
yeah.
Go stalk a peacock, snap to Will Henry. You know,
yes.
Which I still say to this day around the house. Everybody gets it.
Yes.
It doesn't have to have a deep resonating meaning.
No, it doesn't have to have meaning, which is why we changed it from being life lessons to favorite final thought quote, which makes no sense. And that's perfect for us because we don't make a lot of sense all the time.
No. Okay.
It's more fitting.
I was reading the book, I just made a list of all the ones I really, really liked.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? The fun ones only kicked in. Guess what?
Oh, when was it?
When Kamala came in.
Shocking.
Shocking.
So shocking. Everything about this is shocking.
I do have two more for fun. I did have Ghost Stalker Peacock in my list.
Yes.
Because it's just purest of delights.
Yes.
But I'll give you my two lighter ones first. So the first one is Kamala again, obviously.
Of course.
I have not been so excited since a massacre 12 years ago. All those bodies, so delicious.
Oh. I love that she's excited by massacres.
Yes. And Kamala again, live eternal damnation with the utmost simplicity. Stay on your own cremation grounds and eat only the bones that you find yourself. Words to live by.
Yes. Except, Kamala, look, people don't eat bones. You eat bones, but people don't really eat bones. No. I don't know if that's good advice.
Well, it depends who you're advising, doesn't it, really?
It's true.
My more serious one is, and it's one that I liked straight away as soon as I heard, because I listened to the audiobook and then I read it to do the summary. And this is the one that stood out to me, and I instantly, as soon as I heard it, I wrote it down. It was, show me a dream unrealised. Don't show me unchangeable paths.
Ooh.
I just really like that line.
Yeah. That's lovely. Well, if you liked this, try this. Do you have anything that you would like to suggest?
Well, there was one author I was going to suggest.
Mm-hmm.
Because I already said at the top of the show, it rang so true, so similar.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm actually going to suggest The Wrath and the Dawn by Renée Dyer. Sorry if I pronounced that one wrong. And the summary, as on Goodreads is, in a land ruled by a murderous boy king, each dawn brings heartache to a new family. Khalid, the 18-year-old Khalfi of Khorasan, is a monster. Each night he takes a new bride, only to have a silk cord wrapped around her throat come morning. When 16-year-old Shahrazad, dearest friend, falls victim to Khalid, Shahrazad vows vengeance and volunteers to be his next bride. Shahrazad is determined not only to stay alive, but to end the Khalfi's reign of terror once for all. Night after night, Shahrazad beguiles Khalid, weaving stories that enchant, ensuring her survival, though she knows each dawn could be her last. But something she never expected begins to happen. Khalid is nothing like what she imagined him to be. The monster is a boy with a tormented heart. Incredibly, Shahrazad finds herself falling in love. How is this possible? It's an unforgivable betrayal. Still, Shahrazad has come to understand all is not as it seems in this palace of marble and stone. She resolves to uncover whatever secrets lurk and, despite her love, be ready to take Khalid's life as retribution for the many lives he's stolen. Can their love survive this world of stories and secrets?
Ooh.
And it seemed quite the same kind of magic and whimsy.
Mm-hmm.
And an impossible love story, perhaps.
Yeah.
So I quite like that one.
Yeah, and kind of a 1001 Arabian Nights.
Yes, story. Very much, very much.
Yeah, yeah.
What about you?
Well, as we've both discussed how much this book reminds us of a Lainey Taylor book, I was going to also suggest a Lainey Taylor, which is what you were going to do. But, you know, we're covering Daughter of Smoke and Bone next month, so mm-hmm. I figure I'll worry about that later. So instead, I'm going to suggest another book by Roshni Chokshi, The Gilded Wolves.
Oh, yes. I was reading that one. Looks good.
Yes. So the summary from Goodreads. No one believes in them, but soon no one will forget them. It's 1889. The city is on the cusp of industry and power, and the Exposition Universelle has breathed new life into the streets and dredged up ancient secrets. Here, no one keeps tabs on dark truths better than treasure hunter and wealthy hotelier Severin Montignet Allery. When the elite, ever-powerful Order of Babel coerces him to help them on a mission, Severin is offered a treasure that he never imagined, his true inheritance. To hunt down the ancient artifact the Order seeks, Severin calls upon a band of unlikely experts, an engineer with a debt to pay, a historian banished from his home, a dancer with a sinister past, and a brother in arms, if not blood. Together, they will join Severin as he explores the dark, glittering heart of Paris. What they find might change the course of history, but only if they can stay alive.
Ooh.
I like a good heist story. And that's definitely what this one is. It's definitely a heist story.
It's been a while since I've read a heist story.
Yeah. So I thought it would be fun to suggest another book by this lovely author.
Yeah, I got lost in the summaries for her other books. They all sound absolutely magnificent.
Yeah. She's got a middle grade series that I believe is very, very popular too.
I'm not surprised. We don't really talk
about middle grade.
No.
On the show. They're delightful though, some of them.
Mm.
Jolly.
Jolly.
Anyway. Anyway. Well, you know what? That's it for this episode of Fictional Hangover. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Claire.
Join us next time as we discuss The Case of the Missing Marcus by Nancy Springer. Hey guys, that's Enola Holmes, and we're also going to watch the movie.
Yay!
So be sure to check out our Facebook page, our Instagram, our Twitter. Check out all of our social medias to help us decide when to watch this movie so we can watch it all together using Teleparty.
Yes.
And now, back to your regularly scheduled outro. Look out for the Would You Rather poll to go along with that book on social media. Don't forget about our book club and monthly challenges on Facebook. Be sure to visit our shop on Redbubble at fictionalhangover.redbubble.com for all your favorite fictional hangover-themed merchandise. And now, become a patron of ours on Patreon at patreon.com/fictionalhangover or support us on Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/fictionalhangover. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book.
You can find us at fictionalhangover.com, follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover, and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. If you'd like this episode, check out our others and rate, review and subscribe so you don't miss out. And finally, special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and Patreon. Thanks for listening.